there?
Yeah.
It made a peep all afternoon. It freaks me out. Obviously, an example of good parenting. Yeah? Unlike the kid that I'll get stuck with tomorrow on the way back, I can assure you. There's nothing I'd rather talk about than 12-step stuff. I got you for an hour. It'll be a quick hour. We'll be done. And we can all hug and...
We're not.
This is a grinder. There was not one of you in here that I wouldn't hug. I mean, I'm down with that. I'm. You guys are all on the same page. It's so... You talk in certain groups and you get so much resistance. All of y'all are on pretty much, as far as I'm concerned, I've not seen one that wasn't on the same basic page. Doesn't mean that you agree with the letter of the law of everything I've said, but you've kept a real open mind to all that we've talked about, and that's what's important. I do a lot of these step studies, but I mean I don't care how you work the steps. You know, as long as you work them. People, you put your own twist on it if you want to, but the closer that we seem to be able to adhere to what the big book says, the better the results seem to be. It's been my experience. And most of y'all in this room that I've talked to are it's an honor to know you. Some of you with long-term sobriety may take exception with this, but you may not. There's some problems in Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yep.
Okay, I love AA. I'm not taking their inventory. I'm saying we have some problems in the fellowship. Our success rates are not very good in certain areas. They're downright dismal. Again, because people have taken the 12 steps and kind of put them aside and done it their own way. Lots of reasons, but one of the main reasons we ended up in trouble was a thing called sponsorship, which has been practically non-existent for a lot of years. A lot of people pay lip service to sponsorship. But real true sponsorship is what we started talking about last night. We qualify the newcomer, we teach the newcomer, and then we hold them accountable. It's not governing their lives. It's not telling them what to do. It's allowing them to get connected to God so that God can tell them what to do. Piss poor sponsorship, weak, ineffectual sponsorship has caused us a lot of problems in our fellowship. We've seen some real problems happen, and we've also watched us not take care of it. In 1971, I was talking to some of y'all about this earlier, but in 1971 in the United States, Nixon, on his way out the door, one of the last things he did, he signed in a piece of legislation called the Hughes Act, which opened the door for anybody that wanted to open a treatment center, you could. Make sense? In other words, you had to have a certificate of need up to a certain point. You had to lobby for the right to open a facility. And the Hughes Act did away with that, so that anybody and his dog could open up a treatment center. The United States had thousands of them opened up. Insurance companies got on the bandwagon here. Insurance, the lobby around this was part of the reason. If we can, as an insurance company, make money off these damn drunks, then we're going to do that. So every treatment center in the country, I mean, literally, guys, they opened thousands of them. Now, the problem was that some of these hospitals were excellent, and some of these hospitals were crap, run by people that didn't understand this problem. Insurance companies decided that they weren't going to pay for God in the 12 steps. That could be an addition. You can teach that too. But what we're going to teach is much more advanced, much more effective means of sobriety. The experiment went so well that in 1993, over 600 treatment centers in the United States went belly up. In 1 year, 600 treatment centers went out of business. Thousands of these hospitals went out of business. Why? because the insurance companies that pushed this legislation to begin with decided that they weren't going to keep doing this because they weren't making any money doing it because we weren't staying sober. You follow? And we thought it was a great idea. We'd stick this insurance policy out there, stick a little treatment rider on there, and we'd clean up. But the problem was, we're not going to treatment once. We're going to treatment six times. And it starts costing the companies money. So they stopped paying. And without the payment, the insurance companies went out of business. You follow? We got into such a tizzy in the 70s and 80s. Our idea of 12-step work became, let's take you to treatment. Mm-hmm. Now, remember, I work in a treatment center. I'm all for treatment. Proper detox, especially with some of the things that you guys are sticking in your bodies today, is important. It's very essential in many cases, especially detoxing off things like pills. Dangerous, highly dangerous to detox off pills. Alcohol is the same as always. It's the most, when we lose more people around alcohol detox than anything else. The idea of taking somebody to treatment is a very altruistic thing, a very, very Christian thing to do, very important thing to do. But it doesn't take the place of this thing called the 12th step. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to others. We tried to help others get well. Make sense? And that's where sponsorship was. And we've got a whole bunch of people that have been let off the hook thinking that some people are going to be good sponsors and some people are going to be crappy sponsors. You with us? That's not true. Everybody in their own way gets a shot at this. The early guys, if you read the history books, some of the books that we talked about Clarence Snyder's history that Mitchell Klein wrote. It talks specifically. Ernie Kurtz has written some wonderful stuff out there. Dick B has written some great stuff. There's. If y'all want to email me for bibliographies on all this kind of stuff about 12-step work, I'll tell you. There's tremendous stories. Bill Wilson, in our own book, was on his ninth day in Towns Hospital as a direct result of a little guy named Ebbie Thatcher coming in 12-stepping him. With only a few weeks of sobriety, he got on a bus and went and found Bill Wilson. He tried to carry this message. He understood the spiritual principle is we give it away, we get to keep it. Goes around, comes around. Make sense? They knew that. Bill Wilson gets out of treatment. The first thing he does is start working with other drunks. He doesn't have much success in the first 6 months. In fact, he scares the daylights out of a lot of people because he's out there preaching. See, he's missing some pieces here. But he gets with Dr. Bob 6 months into this deal in Akron, and they, you with us? Dr. Bob, after a little glitch, June 10th, supposedly, he's the day he goes out and has his last little bender, and he comes back, finally gets off dead center and makes his amends. Do y'all understand why Dr. Bob got loaded? Dr. Bob got loaded because he wouldn't make his damned amends. Mm-hmm. I'm a doctor. If I make these amends, it'll ruin my practice. His practice was ruined anyway. But after the relapse, he realizes, buddy, I'm in trouble here. And he goes and makes all of his amends, and now he's back on track. Dig? They go find alcoholic number three. Now, none of these guys got a year sober. Only a few months. They find alcoholic number three, Bill D. He gets sober. Then they go find alcoholic number four and number five. And I'm alive today because they did that. But now we've got a fellowship where we're going to go out of our way to tell people that you can't work with others until you've been sober a certain amount of time. I stay sober because I work with others. Not because I come speak from the podium like this, but because I sit down in my AA group and sponsor men in the fellowship and give this message of hope back to them. Same message that was given to me in 1987 by a bunch of people that loved me enough to tell me the truth. You down with this so far? It's the ripple effect. Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob, and it just gets wider and wider. Now there's millions of us sober, but there's millions more of us out there that are dying of this disease. How many people are sitting in our fellowship absolutely bone powder dry, miserable? Well, I'm sober one day at a time. You know, you don't want to light a match next to him because it'll just implode. You know, and just explode. I mean, because, guys, that's called being dry. And I guess I don't know if it's even better than drinking. That's not what this is about. Happy, joyous, and free is what it's about. But you see, nobody wants to tell the newcomer that the key to this... Why, somebody said it earlier. Why is the newcomer the most important person? The newcomer is the most important person because that gives us an opportunity to give what we've been taught. And each individual one of you that gets a chance to sit down on a table and carry this message of hope gets to see, gets to feel that power. Here. It's an article. Some of y'all heard me talk about this on CDs. It was an excellent article. It was written in the Grapevine years ago. Not the Grapevine, Box 459. And it was a Christmas edition. And it said the title is Intergroups Ask, Where Have All the Volunteers Gone? Now, this is in New York City, the home of Central Service Office. Dig? AA's headquarters. This is the article about that city. It's about cities all around the world, but here's specifically. The most frustrating thing about answering Intergroup's phone, says Bob R., manager of the Intergroup Association in New York City, is finding an AA member willing to take a 12-step call from some sick alcoholic who has phoned us for help. Sometimes it takes up to 20 calls to identify just one willing volunteer. Some of the responses we hear when a live member actually does answer the phone, what's a 12-step call? How did you get my phone number? Do you mean you actually want me to talk to someone who's still drinking? The saddest response came from a member who exclaimed, "No, I can't do it. I'm busy all day. Today is my sobriety anniversary." I love that one. Boy, would I like to be alone in a nice quiet room with him. Guys, this whole idea, you know the word gratitude? You know, we used to have people come up to the AA club that I got sober in, and that's the only time you'd see them. They'd come up and pick up their anniversary chip. And it's like, I'm so grateful to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm picking up my 20-year chip today. Oh, that's great. How nice for you. Mm-hmm. Where were you Wednesday night when the treatment centers let out 3 buses outside our door, and there was only 3 of us in the meeting? Yeah. But we're all supposed to go pat you on the back because you've got 20 years. Thanks for nothing. I can't. I've done well all day and not spoken in tongues once, and it's fixing to happen. It takes my breath away. This idea. I can't live off the food I had last week, nor so can I live off the spiritual experience that I had 19 years ago. I don't get this excited about Alcoholics Anonymous, folks, because of the spiritual experience that I told y'all about last night, 19 years ago. I get excited about my current experiences with you people today, my current experiences with the guys that I sponsor. It's current, not past. It's the old Janet Jackson song, "What Have You Done For Me Lately?" Current. You'll follow? Amen. We've gotten off the page. Our idea of 12-step work is let's send them to treatment. The problem is they're not hearing the solution in treatment. They're getting a lot of good information. I'm not knocking that. But you know, guys, my job at this hospital is to monitor the people after they leave. We have 5 of us on staff, and that's all we do all day long is hang off the telephones and sit in front of emails and contact these patients that have left to make sure they're okay. Everyone that we can get connected to a good group. You with us? I've got a bunch of phone numbers from you already. If we ever have a patient coming back to Vancouver, I got their butts covered. But you call this guy, he's going to take care of you. You with me? Call this lady. She'll take you to the meeting. She'll show you around. Now, when we have patients that do that, they stay sober. When the patients don't do that, they don't. Treatment doesn't fix us. Treatment is not recovery. Treatment is discovery. You can benefit greatly from that experience. The nutrition, the doctor's lectures, the therapeutic stuff that we go through, you can benefit from all of that. That will not stop you from drinking. It's what happens when you leave that treatment center that counts. Make sense?
Absolutely.
Guys, now listen. This hospital's been in business 35 years. We know what we're doing there. And I'm the guy that compiles the stats. I'm telling you exactly how the cow ate the cabbage here. The patients that walk out and don't finish this work that we've asked them to start relapse. I don't care how good of work they did at that hospital. If they don't continue to do the work, this fatal progressive illness will reach up and grab them in the butt and they'll fall flat on their... Yeah? Again, whose responsibility is it to snag these guys and get them through the work?
Ours.
It is ours. We talked about it Friday night. Everybody's waiting for something to happen in our fellowship and in our treatment industry that's going to treat the alcoholic and drug addict better. There's no better way than what we're doing right here. But if you can get somebody backed into a corner and qualify them and then make sure that they finish doing the work, everything's going to be okay. But as early as the early 40s, Bill Wilson started writing articles and letters about the watering down of our message. He could already see the success rates going through the toilet. He could already see the disseminating of the clear-cut message that was given us in 1939 was already being diluted by a bunch of people's opinions. Take your time to work the steps.
90 meetings in
90
days.
90 meetings in 90 days. Thank you. Meetings don't treat alcoholism. Meetings are where I go find people to work with. But you're no use to me unless you've worked the 12 steps, so let's get going. Big difference, guys. I want to read something to you quick. Turn to page, if you've got your books, mark it, page 14, bottom of the page, Bill's story. He's talking about Ebby, the little guy that 12-stepped him. My friend had emphasized, he's talking about Ebby. My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he'd worked with me. Imperative. Faith without works was dead, he said, and how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if the alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If we didn't, we'd surely die. You fear the rest of the paragraph. You follow? This is how I grow spiritually, folks. I don't grow spiritually by praying. If that was the case, the churches would be cranking out a bunch of sober people. They're not. I don't grow spiritually by talking about my day. If that was the case, treatment centers would have a much better success rate. They don't. I grow spiritually by work and self-sacrifice for others. That means it's Monday night and the meeting's over and I'm heading out the door and a little newcomer comes up and says, Chris, buddy, have you got a few minutes for me to talk? And I'm thinking, buddy, I can catch the very end of The Sopranos or I can sit here and talk to this bozo. You with me? But you see, somebody stayed late and talked to me in 1987. I'm sure they had something that they wanted to do too. But they got around me and guaranteed me that I would know what the solution was. I can do that. My mama always asks me. She's asked me a dozen times. She says, when's your debt? She rides Myers too. Bless her heart. I love her to death. But she's the finest mother that ever lived. But she still doesn't understand what this is about. When's your debt to AA going to be paid? Because she sees us gone all the time. She sees the sacrifices that we make and the sacrifice of going to the meetings and stuff. She says, when's your debt to AA? You see, my mom wasn't in dumpsters in Houston, Texas. And she wasn't with me alone in those apartments, those endless apartments, by myself, watching the TV late at night, ripped out of my gourd. She wasn't there. She wasn't there when I took those pill bottles out of that medicine cabinet and tried to commit suicide. Depression? She doesn't have a clue what that's about. Not like us. I'm not knocking her. The world doesn't understand. I'll never have my debt to this fellowship paid up. A completely different life? Uh-uh. What do I got to do? Get out of my head a little bit? Stay late? Help you out a little bit? Give you some advice to make your day a little better? I can do that. And I don't have to go back to school to do it. All I got to do is share my experience, the shit that I've already been through, with a newcomer. instantly bond. And that's what we do. That's what 12-step is about. You get with somebody brand new, you share a little of your story. They share a little of their story. They see that you know what you're talking about. And then you...
set the hook.
You a fisherman?
Amen.
Tell them, Ian, that's right. You set the hook. You tell them about the spiritual experience. You tell them about the 12 steps that will bring about a life-saving change. You with us? They may leave. They may stay. If they stay, you show them how to do it. You offer your service to them. I'll show you how to get from point A to point B quickly so that you can have this amazing experience with us. And then you can come help us help others. Y'all down with this? That's what we do. We're fishermen. That's all we do. We don't have to chase the damn drunk. But we're going to have to go out of our way a little bit to explain this to them, to talk to them about it. We got AA clubs all over Texas. Y'all don't do too much of that up here. A lot of you, people up in the north, you know, they go to churches and they go down to basements. We've got AA clubs with everybody, all the old geezers sit in there with multiple years of sobriety and play dominoes and talk about women and blah, blah, blah. Look up every once in a while with one eye and see the door, you know. A little newcomer comes in all kind of geeked out, freaked out, doesn't know what to do. Doesn't know if there's a meeting going on or what meetings, nothing. Looks around. I've watched it. Looks around. Leaves. I don't worry about him. Alcohol will drag him back. No. No, he won't come back. He'll go drink himself to death. Because you didn't stop your domino game and go get him. Because you didn't understand the full word of responsibility. That's my job. Sitting there at my AA meetings, talking in my little clique and my buds and all the guys and the homies, and we're sitting talking, just, you know, and a little newcomer comes to the door. I'm watching. I'm going to watch for about 1 minute, and if my guys, the guys I sponsor, are not on him, there will be hell to pay tomorrow. And I have every right to give it. See, we got maybe have one shot at that newcomer. Let me ask you a question. A delegate once asked this. I heard a cat. When did it become totally acceptable not to tell the newcomer how to get well? At what point in our fellowship did it become acceptable not to tell the newcomer how to get well? Keep coming back? That didn't tell me shit.
Come back to what?
Next time you're in your AA meeting, your CA meeting, your Crystal Meth Anonymous meeting, your NA meeting, whatever meeting you go to, sit in the back of the room. Get you a cup of coffee. Sit in the back of the room and close your eyes. And then listen. Then listen. Listen to it. Don't share. Just listen. If you were a newcomer sitting in that meeting, would you hear what you needed to hear? Would you hear enough to understand what was necessary in order to get well? Did you get pulled with a vision? Did you get enough hope drilled into you in that meeting to know what this was about? I tell you, in my own home groups, I have to think about it. I have to think about it. No. That's why I get outside myself when people want to send me emails and get pissed about me talking about not talking about anything you want in a meeting. We're here for one reason. Primary purpose. That's what our traditions say. Primary purpose. To carry the message of hope to the newcomer. What's the message? The 12 steps. But we're not ever going to talk about it because we're too busy talking about everything else under the sun. Trying to be a junior. I get so sick of it. The junior therapists, they come out of the woodwork. I'll never forget being up in Ohio. I told them I'd talk in Toledo the second time if they took me to Akron. And they did. It was the bomb. But they took me to this meeting. Said, this is the best meeting you'll ever want to go to. This is a great meeting. And I walked in. And there's the usual group of old geezers in there. And they had their little easy chair. And this is so-and-so. She's been sober like 30 years. She's I don't know if I remember how many, 20-something years. And so... I'm sitting at this table. It's an open discussion meeting. Chairperson brings a topic, 4-step. I says, hot damn, that's pretty good. We're going to talk about the 4-step in here. First lady starts off. She's got this resentment against her ex-husband. 4-step. You with us? Great. Husband's pissed. She didn't bring the kids home on time. He's taking the kids. She's pissed. She feels like she's been shit on. She's wrong. She should have brought the kids home on time. You with us? Grow up. Own it. But we didn't talk about that. All the little junior lawyers came out. Well, this is what I think you should do about that. Well, this is what I think you ought to sue that son of a bitch. He's got no right talking. Nah. You with us? Listen, I'm sitting here. Right side, some of you might have noticed I'm blind on one side. I can't. I heard this sound. I'm sitting there listening. I looked next to me and this guy slammed his head on the table. He's from a treatment center and they bring him to this meeting every week. And I looked up and I patted his little back and said, "Buddy, are you okay?" He says, he looked up one eye. He says, "It's the same. Every Saturday morning, it's the same." The old pooba in the back in her easy chair sits up smoking cigarette. We got 60 people in the room. Everybody needs a chance to share, but she's got to finish smoking first. But she's got the floor. Puts the cigarette out. "Well, this is what I'd do. I'd get me a good lawyer and I'd sue his ass." "Oh, thanks. I'm coming unglued." You with me? The lady that brought the topic, the lady that came with the problem, she's going to leave with the same problem. Except she's going to be armed with enough information to keep her a victim the rest of the day. She's justified. You with us? Nobody told her how to cow eat the cabbage. Nobody told her about the freeing steps. They told her about what to do legally. Like we're a bunch of lawyers in these meetings. We're not. We're not therapists. We're not doctors. How many times have we heard it in meetings over and over and over again? "If you're taking antidepressants, you're not sober." "Oh, doctor, I didn't know you were here." Each of us as sponsors get to decide if we want to sponsor people taking other medications. That's up to us. It's not up to us to tell a person to get off those meds. Shut up!
That's right.
You've got no right. You've got no right. We watch people die of it every year. Make sense?
Absolutely.
What's our primary purpose? Our primary purpose is not to fix your problem. Primary purpose is to get you connected to God so God can fix your problems. I've said it 1,000 times. You with us?
Yeah.
I want to read you something. Turn to page 129. Bottom paragraph. It's a great chapter in there, working with others. This is a chapter called Family After. A lot of you guys skip it because it's about the women or something. I don't know why you skip it. It's some great stuff in there. Even if he displays a certain amount of neglect and irresponsibility towards the family, it is well to let him go as far as he likes in helping other alcoholics. During those first days of convalescence, this will do more to ensure his sobriety than anything else. You with us?
Mm-hmm.
During those first days of convalescence, when you feel like dying, when you feel worthless, if you'll go reach out and help somebody else, you'll start feeling better about yourself. Make sense? Well, the book said in the first days of convalescence, you need to go work with somebody else, but you've got this old geezer sitting over here 20 years sober telling you you can't work with anybody until you've been sober a year. You can't chair a meeting until you've been sober 6 months. Why? How's a newcomer going to get involved unless we let them? I'm telling you, it's our responsibility to show people how to do this. You don't turn them loose. "Here, you chair tonight." You pull up the chair next to him and say, "Buddy, let's chair this together. Let me show you how to chair a member, a chair a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous." You with us? Pick somebody to read the traditions. Pick somebody to read. "Come on, I'll show you how to do it. You got a little topic? Let's talk. Okay, let's help me out here." And they showed me how to do that. They showed me how to work with newcomers. They gave us shit enough to show me, to teach me. They didn't just turn me loose. Y'all down with this?
Oh, yeah.
we start working with others, folks, we'll have less and less people relapsing because you'll start feeling responsible. I've never seen anything like it. I'll never forget the first time a guy called me from a meeting. I was about 3 months sober, and I shared something. I'm in the food business for years, and I said something about cooking. And this guy keyed on that and started talking to me after the meeting. He worked at a little fast food joint down the street, a little breakfast joint. And I'd seen him up there flipping eggs, and we talked about flipping eggs, for God's sake. But anyway, I gave him my number, and he called. Jan picked up the phone, this girl I was living with at the time, and she picked up the phone. She says, "It's for you." I said, "Who is it?" "It's the guy you met at the meeting tonight. Cool, here, get the..." "Oh, no, I'm not here." She said, "Yes, you are." You follow? Because I'm uncomfortable. She handed me the phone. "Hey, bud, what's happening?" You know, and I just thought, oh, shit. And he's coming apart. He wants to drink, and he's crazy. He says, "Can you come talk to me?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I guess I could." He was down at the restaurant fixing to go before his shift. I said, "I'll come down and we'll talk eggs. I don't know. I'll come down." And I sat down. I took my little book and I went down. I said, "What do I say to this guy?" He said, "Buddy, talk about your story. Tell him. Explain to him what happened to you." And I did that. This guy stayed sober a while and then ended up getting loaded. Don't know where he is tonight. The point of the story is I walked home and went back up to my little apartment and walked in the door. And this girl that I was living with looked at me and she says, "What happened to you?" I was going to be gone 15 minutes, and it was 2 hours later. But I walked in, and there was a visible change in my demeanor. I was working with a drunk. That's what happened to me. I was given back. Never been the same since. I've taken mountains of medication. I've been in 10 years in therapy dealing with low self-esteem. I've stood in front of mirrors and told myself that I was a beautiful child of God and then turned right around and tried to commit suicide. And I sat down with a guy and talked about my experience of drinking and what I did to get well. And I saw this flicker of hope in this little guy's eyes, and it changed me. And I realized for the first time why I survived the dumpsters. Why I survived all the crazy shit I did. So that I could help that little guy. Yeah. You walk into an AA club sometime. Freaking girl. You walk into an AA club sometime and look over in the corner and see a guy that you've sponsored and worked through the steps. You just talked to him last night about making some more amends and you're working him through, right? But he's got him a little guy cornered, right? He's got his big book open and he's looking down. Now listen here, buddy. This is an important part. I want to show you about this right here. You know what I'm saying? And he's all lathered up. And you can walk in and you can just feel the excitement in the room, you know, because he's fixing to set the hook here. He's telling them about the power and peace and the sense of direction that he's going to get as a result of working these steps. And you look over at the other little guy and you see a little flicker of hope in this guy's eyes. You know, and he says, "Yeah, no shit. You mean I could wake up in the morning and the obsession would be gone and I wouldn't want to smoke cocaine anymore or drink alcohol?" "That's exactly right. Yeah, that's the ticket." And he's all excited. Little guy that I worked with is working with this little guy. You see how it goes?
Yeah.
And then this little guy catches fire and he starts working with that little guy. We've got a group of guys, the guys that I sponsorship in my lineage, we do a little group every other Thursday called the Mad Dogs. It's pretty good. Because I was a Mad Dog drunk. I drank like a Mad Dog. You with us? I mean, I drank up the bar. You know, I didn't sit on the... Mad Dogs. On a road less traveled. We got t-shirts. Only way that you can get in my group is to be in my sponsorship lineage because it's not AA. It's a men's accountability group. There are no women in there because I don't sponsor women. Men. Guys I sponsor, guys he sponsors. You with us? There'll be 40 of us in a room on a every other Thursday. For 1 hour, we break into groups and we have an accountability. Where are you at in the program? We want to know. You got 2 minutes to talk. Where are you at in the program? What step are you working on? How many commitments you got? How many guys are you sponsoring? What are you doing about your health? You with us? And we're taking notes. How are you with the sex and the checks? Own it. Because we're going to write it down and we're going to hold you accountable. And if you come back 2 weeks from now and you're still doing the same stuff, I'm working on 6 and 7. You're going to have 7, 8 guys in my little group that are going to eat you one after another. You follow? It's like a little mini steel on steel. And we're going to hold you accountable. And you have to sit there and take it undefended. The bomb. You ought to see what happens when they do it to me. I thought when we started doing this, they were going to let me off the hook. Chris is the poobah. We're not going to hold him accountable. Chris, we need to be talking to you about something kind of important here. Notice that you've been kind of tired here lately of all this travel and blah, blah, blah. And we think maybe you might consider... I was pissed. I was so pissed. Who do you think you're talking to? I mean, I didn't say anything because you can't. It's undefended. I have to sit there and listen to these little pukes I sponsor hold me accountable. Oh man, talking about humility. Oh, that's how cool is that? It's the bomb. I got the formats. I can show you. Any of you guys ever want to set those up? It's the bomb. I'll show you. Our job is to carry the message to the new guy. If they want it, great. If they don't want it, we don't chase after them. We go to the next guy. Don't worry. There's plenty. We got an endless supply of people. And you know, guys, you don't have to just look at the detox centers. There are people in our own groups with multiple years of sobriety that are bone powder dry, miserable. You can show them how you got past it. Make sense? Yeah. The spiritual malady can be treated by working the steps again.
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
How come you don't sponsor women?
Because I don't.
Can't sponsor them?
I won't sponsor them. I'm glad you ask. You want me to tell you why? It's not because I think anything goofy will happen. Two things happen when I sponsor a woman. We're an AA group and I start sponsoring her. Immediately, every mouth in this room starts to wag. Yeah. Chrissy's banging some so-and-so. Here we go. You with us? And I'm not. I have a wife at home and she understands that my heart is in this fellowship. But at 2 o'clock at night when she calls and I'm in the living room having a little chat with her, all purely honorable and you with me, it makes her uncomfortable. Right. It's not fair to her. You can do it if you want to. I'm not saying don't do it. I know lots of men that sponsor women. I'm saying the other thing it does, it takes away another's gift of that woman. If I sponsor, another woman can't sponsor. And that's the problem with so many of us. Women, I hear it all the time. I relate better to men. No shit. Let me translate that for you. You manipulate us well. I never knew a woman yet that couldn't run roughshod on me. All they got to do is start that crying stuff, and I'm okay. Forget it. You're right. We're pushing this too fast. Don't worry about the poor stuff. I'm just so good.
No joke, man.
They need to learn. Because I had a tough time. You know who I had a tough time with when I got sober was men. I'm a little skinny guy. I've never been a big sports nut, football guy. I never had much to... I was an artist all my life. I was fascinated by music and art. And I was a sculptor. You know, I mean, in my head anyway. And I, you know what I'm saying? And I related more to women. That's who I hung around a lot. And what I had to do was get in the room with a bunch of hairy leg boys and learn. And those are my mentors today. I got men mentors. Some of y'all in this room will continue to be my mentors. But there'll be people that I will talk to because you've had the experience. I know how to stay sober 19 years. I don't have a clue how to stay sober 20. Some of you guys in here are going to show me how to do that. Make sense? That's the only reason I don't. I know a lot of people that do. My sponsor does and has for years. But I just don't because of Patty. I don't want to freak her out. Cool?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's solid.
And because I might have sex with him. Okay. I know. The hour is late. Y'all have been great. Want to say a couple of quick things, and I'm out. I'm over and out. The question is asked often, we've all talked here, and I'm sitting up here from this podium and watching you guys nod your head. A lot of y'all are in agreement with most of the stuff we've talked about, especially the need to go do good, strong 12-step work and to carry a clear-cut message of hope in our meetings. Everybody seems to be on the same page there. The question is, how do you do it? A lot of you guys, you'll end up listening to CDs I've done and other speakers, and then you go into meetings like gunslingers and you want to eat somebody's butt. You follow? And that's not how to do it. We a lot of us in this room that I've had a chance to share with, I mean, so many of y'all know this book well. We have enough information to be quite dangerous at times. You're with us? I mean, you can't go into a meeting and hear somebody not misquote the book. And of course, in our attempt to be helpful, I want to correct you. Well, that's not exactly what that says. And if I do it in the wrong tone, I can do more damage than I do good. You follow? The problem is not, if I have a format that allows us to say anything we want to say in a meeting, then I can't complain when a newcomer or an old timer says anything they want to say in that meeting. The fourth tradition allows us, we're autonomous, except in matters affecting other AA groups as a whole. We can set up our formats any way we want. What happened was, in the 70s, after that Grapevine article, we got in this rut of this idea that the only acceptable meeting is the open discussion format. We need to stop it. We need to start going to some of these meetings. In Dallas, Texas, there's over 1,500 open discussion meetings a week. You with us? If you want to go to a literature-based meetings, my last count was about 25. Make sense? So if you want to go study the literature, you've got to go look for one of those meetings. If you want to go talk about your stupid divorce again, you can go to, I mean, they're everywhere. We need to change our formats to some of these meetings. We need to go back to the original premise. The early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, the meetings were divided into like two main things. We had speaker meetings where somebody got up from the podium and shared their terrible war story, and we got to identify and bond. You with us? And the other were step studies where we talked about the actual work. How do we do this? How do we go do a proper 12-step call? What are these traditions about? What is acceptable? You'll follow? Literature-based meetings. We didn't sit around and talk about our problems. Now that's documented. Today, we need to go to group consciences. Some of you guys, you say, well, I need to get courage and go in there and tell those people they're wrong. No, you don't. Stop setting yourself up for a butt whipping. How are they wrong? They're doing just what they were taught. You need to go to group conscience, and you need to bring a powerful case of returning to the literature to that group conscience. And I'm going to tell you, your experiences like mine, you won't have any problem changing a bunch of those open discussion meetings back to literature-based meetings. We don't need to get rid of, people misquote me all the time. You're saying we need to get rid of all of those open discussions. I'm not either. A lot of y'all like those. A lot of people benefit from those. Some open discussion meetings where we can talk about our day, I think that's a great idea. The book says we set aside one night a week to go talk about our problems. That's a great idea. One night a week. Preferably the night that the Sopranos are on. So I can... So that we can go. Those are great meetings to go troll for newcomers, because that's where all the newcomers end up going. But guys, for the rest of the week, can't we have a few literature-based meetings?
Yeah.
The topic. In our meetings, we've set format up at the Ingram Solution Group. We've got a format. It says clearly, we read the preamble, the open or closed meeting, and we say, this is not a dumping ground for your problem. Please feel free to come before or after the meeting if you just need to talk. But during the hour, we're going to be talking about the topic being presented out of the first 164 pages of the book. And it's the responsibility of this chairperson to make sure it stays on that topic. We have a bell ringer. We're going to ring it. Everybody gets 5 minutes to share. If you get off topic or talk longer than 5 minutes, the bell ringer will ring a bell. We got that straight out of a Grapevine article. It works great. Everybody gets the bell rung on them once. And then they're sharing and watching the clock because it's embarrassing. You know, when it happened to me, I said, like, I can't believe it happened to me. But you start paying attention. You start paying attention to what you're saying. Come on, guys. Anybody that talks longer than 5 minutes, they're rambling anyway. They're repeating themselves. They're saying the same thing over and over. And what makes you think that what I've got to share is more important than what you've got to share? We got 40 people in the room. I want to hear from as many points of view as we can. The chairperson brings a paragraph or two. as a topic, maybe one line, maybe one word, and that's what we talk about. How's this? How are you experiencing this in your life? What do you think Bill Wilson was talking about here when he wrote this down for us? And over a period of weeks, months, and years, we get a chance to study the whole damn book. It is a cool thing. More of those, and we would be a lot better off, folks. What you got?
Bless you.
Bless your heart. What a kind thing to say.
I just want to thank you because in my 6 months sober, there's only very few times that I felt high with such hope and power. And I had that today.
Wow. Bless you. What a nice thing to say. You can thank this group because that's where the power comes from. Right? Let's go to group conscience. Let's change some meeting formats. Let's watch the tone of our voice when we're sharing in meetings. Remember, love and tolerance is our code. We're not there to beat anybody up with the big book. If somebody makes an ass of themselves in a meeting, we ask them to come outside, talk to them before or after the meeting, and perhaps share a better way that they could have shared, a better way that they could have done things. There's no reason to go into meetings and embarrass people. Make sense? Let's be loving and kind to the newcomer that may not know what to do. We are teachers. You with us? I'm going to read it. Some of y'all heard me read this before. When I talk about 12-step stuff, I can't help but do it. It's a great... It floated around the internet for years. It's called A Drunk Fell in a Hole. And I think it sums up what we've talked about. And I'm going to read this and then close and be out of here. I'm going to try to do it without crying. A drunk fell in a hole and couldn't get out. A businessman went by. The drunk called out for help. The businessman threw him some money and told him to get himself a ladder. But the drunk couldn't find a ladder in the hole he was in. A doctor walked by and the drunk said, "Help me, I can't get out." The doctor gave him drugs and said, "Take this, it will relieve the pain." The drunk said, "Thanks." But when the pills ran out, he was still in the hole. A renowned psychiatrist rode by and heard the drunk crying for help. He stopped and said, "How did you get there? Were you born there? Were you put there by your parents? Tell me about yourself. It will alleviate your sense of loneliness." So the drunk talked with him for about an hour. Then the psychiatrist had to leave, and he said that he'd be back next week. The drunk thanked him. But he was still in the hole. A priest came by, and the drunk called for help. The priest gave him a Bible and said, "I'll pray for you." He got down on his knees and prayed for the drunk and then left. The drunk was very grateful. He read the Bible, but he was still stuck in the hole. A recovered alcoholic happened to be passing by. The drunk cried out, "Hey, help me. I'm stuck in the hole." Right away, the recovered alcoholic jumped in the hole with him. The drunk said, "What are you doing? Now we're both stuck here." The recovered alcoholic said, "It's okay. I've been here before. I know the way out." It's our only answer, folks. We're the only people that know the way out. We got to turn around and use that power that God's given us to help the next little knucklehead. Y'all have sure been wonderful. Thank you very much.